flow is the characteristic of people doing good improvisation, and it's the feeling that good improvisers have when it's going well. And that's absolutely the same experience of when you're having a good solution-focused conversation or a good solution-focused activity with the client or with the group. So these are the same thing, and we see our task as creating conditions for flow for the participants in the training groups and also for the clients in conversations.
That is simply focused with every training and simply good at for live and joy and ease.
We've got a brand new exciting episode for you. Please welcome your host, Elfie Cherney and Dominic Godad.
Hey, hey, hey. Welcome back, everyone, to episode number 79. Hello, Paul Seth Jackson.
Hello.
We're very excited to be here with you today, and we already spent almost two wonderful days together, so thank you so much for having us here in your wonderful home with your lovely family.
It's our pleasure.
We've known each other for a long time. I first remember Soul World Conference in Vienna. You were coach at the random coaching workshop that I gave, and it was such a great experience to see how you asked those random questions to a stranger and surprised everybody with doing that.
Yeah, that's still probably the best coaching session I've ever given, according to the feedback of the coachees, so thank you for that.
Paul, you're one of my early solution-focused heroes, and not just because of the book The Solutions Focus as co-author with Mark McCurgo, but also through many conversations we had at mainly the Soul Work Conference and kind of watching you work and combining solution focus and improvisation has always fascinated me. You're not only writer and author, you're solution-focused practitioner, you're coach, you're trainer, you are co-founder of the Soul World, you were part of the Bristol Group back then, and have been working with Janine Waldman and being business partners with the Solutions Focus.
So Paul, what is it that fascinates you about solution focus?
Many things fascinating about solution focus. I was in a workshop last week and we were teaching people solution focus for performance conversations, and we teach them solutions talk with some solution focused questions, and most of the people go, oh, this is really good. Yeah, I can see this is a lovely conversation. And then somebody senior will say, oh yes, but we must look at the problem first. And this happens a great deal, and it fascinates me that people still think that way and somehow haven't quite yet seen the elegance and the simplicity and the wonderful completeness of solution focus as a way of dealing with life's challenges and issues and problems. So it fascinates me how they get that and sometimes how they don't get that.
So how did you get it?
Well, I got it having already been, as you mentioned in the introduction, a practitioner of improvisation. And solution focus seems to me to be very much aligned with an improvisational approach, in that they both have the idea of making use of what's there. That's almost a definition of both solution focus and of improvisation. And if you're making use of what's there, you're not worried about what isn't there, or by extension, what's gone wrong, or a detailed analysis of a problem. It's much more pragmatic about, here's what we've got, here's what we want to do, let's get on with it, how do we make progress? So when I started reading about solution focus and attending conferences, I went to EBTA conferences and training with Brief, with Harvey Ratner, working with Mark McCurgo and Jenny Clark, the ideas seemed so beautiful and well expressed and comprehensive. And I started using them in my work and at home in my own life as well. And the power of them persuaded me, because I, of course, was also very suspicious when I first heard this idea that you can somehow bypass the problem or go straight to the solution. This seemed crazy, but it works. And it's been working for 15 years or more.
You were a journalist, so this might make you suspicious by nature somehow.
Yes. The two edges of being a journalist, there's suspicion on the slightly negative side and curiosity on the positive side. And the other thing about being a journalist is you get to meet lots of people and see inside many places. And then you have to make some kind of coherent sense of articulating what people have said to you to convey that to a reader who has not had the same privilege of meeting the person or seeing the event. So you practice that skill of communicating what it is that you've seen in a way that makes sense to yourself and to other people as well.
Paul, what is it that fascinates you in bringing together solution focus and improv? Because you do a lot of work around those two things and you keep being fascinated by both things, solution focus and improvisation, and they don't seem to be that different for you.
That's right. And they both seem to me to answer the questions that the world is now asking. If we're talking about communities or talking about organizations or teams or even individuals, people need to adapt to a lot of change that's going on. So they need that flexibility. And if you're adapting in a complex world, you can't just go by straightforward, this is the cause, this is the effect, I know exactly what's going to happen. But you can go by setting a vision or some kind of goal or sense of direction of where you would like to go. And then you need your resources. And what Solution Focus in particular does is enliven people's resources. It finds them and helps people to see and appreciate their own resources so that they're ready to take on those challenges. And then as we start to make some moves, take some actions, do some things, we can see whether we're making progress towards where we want to go. And if we're not, we stop and do something else. And if we are making progress towards it, we can do more of it, which is the solution focus idea of if it's working, do more of it. If it's not, stop and do something else. And it's a very improvisational approach of seeing what happens by way of an experiment, a test, a small risk, and notice what happens, and then incrementally do the next thing if it's taking you in the right direction. And it's not just solution focus and improvisation. This is part of the way that many thinkers and practitioners are now seeing the world, is step-by-step approach towards what's wanted. And agile software is a really good example of where that's replaced an older, more structured way of doing things to good effect.
I remember us talking about what we do in solution focus. We talk about preferred future. We talk about what works towards that. We talk about next steps or signs of progress. And then you said, and then they go out and improvise with the world around them. And you have a model.
Yes, it's the solution focus model. It's in the book, The Solutions Focus. And to that, I've added the point between where we want to be and where we are now and called that improvisation space, because that is where we are enacting what happens, moving forward in time. And it's very much an interactional space, in that what we do then connects and interacts with what other people are doing and the environment as that changes around us. And we are co-creating emergently in the moment all the time. And the great gift of improvisation is to help us with skills for focusing on being in the moment, noticing what's around us, and being ready to embrace that uncertainty and take that next step.
And solution-focused practitioners, they practice their solution-focused skills, and I guess improv people practice their improv skills. How could the combination or knowing about improv and solution-focused, or about solution-focused and improv, be beneficial to both sides?
That's a good question. Solution focus has an approach to change that is, to my mind, comprehensive. If for any change need, where somebody wants something to be different, you can use solution focus, and the combination of the tools of solutions focus will get you somewhere, usually successfully, no guarantees, but there's a way of going about things, and it can be turned into a step-by-step way of doing it. Improvisation is more of an attitude or a spirit that doesn't tell you everything that you're going to need to do from beginning to end, but it helps you to make sense of what's going on around you, perceive the world in a certain way, and approach it with a spirit that's likely to help you succeed. So they're doing slightly different things, or they're described in slightly different ways. People see them differently, but they are harmonious, and the combination of them is very enjoyable and seems to me as well to be very powerful.
So what of this attitude do you see solution focused practitioners do? And what of the improv attitude? Well, would be nice to see even more in solution focused practice.
The improvisation community has a lot to learn from solution-focused practice, because solution-focused is better theorized, better conceptualized, the writing about it is much stronger. And this is not any disrespect to the improvisation community, but the improvisation community comes from largely a theatre background. They're good at making shows and making people laugh and having a great time. And the benefit then of thinking deeply about what it is we are doing as improvisers is something that the solution focus library and resource deck can support. And on the other hand, the transaction the other way is that the solution focus practitioner can get perhaps more into the moment, more spontaneity, a bit more humour into their work, and not be so concerned about staying rigidly to the script or following these particular questions, but responding in the moment to each client, which of course is part of the idea of it, but we don't always see that happen. Sometimes people like to stick to the script, understandably, when they're starting out, and if you take an improvisational approach or an improvisational attitude, then you're more relaxed about following the conversation where it takes you, and that's beneficial usually to the work.
So when you train solution-focused practitioners, how does improv, you know, show in your trainings, and how do you invite people to try out things in a more improv style?
The training that we do is based hugely on experiential work, lots of group activity, lots of paired activity, lots of movement, and all of that is imbued with ideas and activities and exercises that I've learnt and developed through working with improvisers and improvisation sources. So the feeling of the training is improvisational. And as trainers, we're also improvisational ourselves in that we're going to respond to where the group is at or where the individuals within the group are at. So we might offer a menu of things to look at in the afternoon and the group can pick, or we might check in with people as to where we are now and what else do we need and build the rest of the course from there. It's one of the ideas of improvisation is that there's always freedom within structure. So we have a structure, but we're conscious too of the freedom within it, and that allows us that degree of flexibility.
So that's from the side of you being trainers. And how do you invite your participants to, you know, enter this zone of freedom within the structure?
We create a very safe space in the training by giving people lots of experiences in which they can feel confident step by step. And as people feel confident, they're willing to have a go, try things, let go of preconceived ideas. And at the same time, there's a degree of challenge. We're setting them some tasks or tough things to do within the activities. And there's this beautiful interplay between challenge and competence that leads to flow. It's Csikszentmihalyi's research on flow. And flow is the characteristic of people doing good improvisation. And it's the feeling that good improvisers have when it's going well. And that's absolutely the same experience of when you're having a good solution-focused conversation or a good solution-focused activity with the client or with the group. So these are the same thing. And we see our task as creating conditions for flow for the participants in the training groups, and also for the clients in conversations. Then people are at their best and are feeling resourceful and creative and imaginative and inspired to come up with the ideas that are going to serve them well in whatever their challenge or task might be.
One connection I see between improvisation and solution focus, and also in your trainings and in your way of teaching and also doing solution focus, is this yes and attitude, and really appreciating what's there and adding to that, let's say with a question, for example, or in a training when the people that you described in the beginning who say, well, don't we have to talk about the problem, approaching them or having a conversation with them with this yes and mentality.
The yes and mentality is the core of both approaches. So all improvisers know the expression yes and, which means, as you've described it, accepting and then building. So you accept first and then you build in some way. And in solution focus, this is often expressed as respect for the client. We take the client to be the expert in their own world, so we'll accept that. And we'll take everything that they say or do seriously, which is very much like an improvisation comedy sketch. You take the suggestions of your fellow players seriously, and that creates the world in which the scene is then played out and the audience enjoys the imaginative leap. Very similar in solution-focused conversation. You're having a conversation about a possible future. It's imaginary, hasn't happened yet, but we can co-construct it and make it seem very real to the people who are having that conversation. And then that will have the effect of inspiring them towards it, helping them recognize when parts of it have happened, noticing when the other parts of it do start to happen. So different consequences from the same technique, but both built on accepting and building.
And also in trainings, when we observe trainings or when we give trainings and we see flow, It often starts, or this yes and mentality is often included. And even though they say things that might not be 100% aligned with solution focus, they feel confident to learn more and go on and find out their own answers and kind of, yeah, really generating this flow with this yes and, compared to telling them, well, of course we don't have to talk about problems, this is a completely different approach, chair and we do it differently, and kind of trying to convince them.
Yes. Well, you're very good at that. So I've noticed this in your podcast that you make everyone look very good, which is something that is a mantra of improvisers, make your partner look good. And that the ways of dealing with objections and arguments has to be very carefully handled in a training, because you don't want to end up having a big debate. But on the other hand, people have a view that maybe is quite different, and that can be respected. So I might say to the manager who says, "Oh, we have to look at the problem first." Yes, that's what I used to think. And it makes a lot of sense to think that. Let's try this today and have these conversations and see by the end of the day how you're feeling about it. And it's always a choice that you can use this approach. You don't have to. We're looking for what works. We're after the same end results, the same goals. And that's usually enough. And we will say as well, there's a theoretical basis for the way that we're putting this forward. And we can share that. We show the model. And we take care to say that if you do this, in our experience, it seems that you will deal with the problem, because the problem is no longer there by the time you've reached the point that we want to get to. Would you be okay with a process or a system or a way of thinking that gets you there without going deeply into the problem, were that to work? And people will usually say, yeah, that sounds okay. Then we give it a try. And it, going back to what I was saying about it being this experimental feel of trying things out and having a go. And the range of activities is usually engaging, because it's the facilitation and the training style. And it gives people an experience in which they don't have a lot of time to stop and think about, what are your 10 objections to this? It's much more about, oh yeah, that was a very interesting conversation. Yes, that touched an important memory, or I recognize something that's important to me, or I was able to coach and affirm somebody else and appreciate them, and that seemed to have beneficial impact. So people are noticing the benefits and the difference that it's making, which is of course a solution-focused way of going about it. And it doesn't leave time for all the objections to fester, and we can take question and answer at the end if there's still things that people are a bit concerned about. But I'm talking practically about several organizations that we've done performance management conversations in, and people get it and are willing to give it a try. And as long as they're getting good results from doing that, which we check in with the organization to see if they are, then we're happy with it. And if there's one or two that don't quite get it or are not so skilled at it, that's okay. That's the normal way of things within an organization. And it takes time. We've been doing this for 20 years or more. It's still a frustration to me that the world doesn't see the beauty and the elegance and the simplicity and the practicality of this, and that we're still out there teaching. On the other hand, we have a living to make, so that's okay too.
Yeah, when Elfie and I discussed about the preferred future, then we found out that someday we might not have to talk about solution focus anymore, because everybody's just doing it, and of course then there is no business anymore.
Yeah,
that might also be a good thing.
There's one extreme of solution focus which says more or less that everyone is solution focused, everyone is doing it, and all we have to do is look for that. And that might be a practical approach to helping the world get more of it, but I don't think that's true. There are a lot of people who say, oh yeah, of course we're solutions focused, and you look at what they do and it's not solutions focused as I recognize it. And I'm quite a purist in the other way of saying, oh, there are some principles here and some practices, and we can teach you them and you can get more skilled at them. So in that sense, there's a very long way still to go, because it's a minority sport. We're in a problem saturated world. People like talking about problems. I love talking about the problems of my football team, but I don't expect it's going to make the team any better. So if I'm doing a serious change project where people want something to be different and are willing to do something about it and they're involved in it, then we do that work, and solution focus seems to me to be the approach of choice. Very reliable.
So, and when you say there are like some principles and people get it, what is it that you want them to get, or how do you notice that they got it?
The biggest difference is solutions talk and problem talk. So how somebody asks a question, the choice of words they have in that question, they are immediate signals. And you'll know from your experience, you get attuned to it and you can tell very quickly if someone is solution focused in that thing they're saying or in general, or problem focused. And the people who think they are solutions focused, who have not looked at it or learnt something about it, they mean that they want a solution. They want an answer to their problem. Well, of course they do. But they probably will still be doing it through an analysis of the problem, focus on the problem, and they will look at mistakes and what's gone wrong and investigations into that, rather than what's wanted, what's working, what's gone right. And I'm very keen on the learning that comes from each of those explorations. And it's heretical in today's world where there's something of a failure fetish. People think we learn from our mistakes and we can fail more often, fail faster. And you can see the intention in this is let's not cover up our mistakes, which are of course useful things to promote, but it misses all the learning that is there in knowing how to do something. The solution focused question, when someone tells you of a success, is how did you do that? Because the recipe for success is inside how they did it. Or if we're looking at resilience, the lessons and the magic is in what you did to recover, not the fact or the way that you failed to do something in the first place. That's the bit we want to leave behind. So there's some learning from mistakes, like don't do that again, but unless there's a binary choice, it doesn't tell you what to do. In order to get to somewhere, it's no use knowing all the places you've been that were not so good. You have to think about the place you want to go and find the way to get to that place.
And we just recently saw that on Facebook, where there was a Facebook post and we both commented on that and had the same or similar ways of describing how we learn from our successes, how we learn from what works, or how others, like our kids, learn from, well, the moments when they were able to do it and then do it again. And how people, when they maybe look at kids with a problem-focused view or with this view on they learn from mistakes, then only see that.
They do, yes.
As soon as you see through the lens of, wow, they learn from what works and do more of that, then you see that, of course.
And that is one of the most subtle points about it, is that you see what you're looking for. So if you're already convinced that you're learning from mistakes, you'll see the mistakes, and somehow when the person has done it, you'll claim that therefore they've learned from their mistakes, and you'll miss all that success that happened along the way. We were talking about children learning, and it seems to me that the children learn, for example, to balance and walk very skillfully, not so much by falling over, but by balancing on the edge and putting a little bit more weight here and a bit more weight there on a balancing board we were watching today. And they do it brilliantly until they get tired, and then they start to fall over and make mistakes. And at that point, they're not learning. They're just getting ready for sleep. They're learning in the time when they're doing it well. It's not just children. If you look at chefs and cooking, and you had a choice of one recipe book or another recipe book, and in one recipe book there's all the recipes that didn't work, you can have that and only that, or you can have the recipe book of all the successful recipes and you can only have that. Which would you choose?
That's an interesting question. Depends on who the guests are.
Depends on who your guests are. If you like your guests and want to give them a good time. All right, it's an airplane. You want to fly an airplane. I can give you all the details of the airplanes that have crashed. And I could give you, on the other hand, all the details of the airplanes that have successfully flown for years and years. You can only have one or the other. Which would you like?
And we'd like to go to the SFPTA conference in Montreal in November, so probably take the planes that worked well in the past. And there's also another thing about failure or mistakes that people sometimes don't see the interactional part of it. And when you do improvisation, you know that the result or kind of the show is not the result of one person, it's the result of many, many different interactions in between and reactions to reactions. And the same in solution focused conversation, can we respond to the response and respond again, and at the end we had a good conversation. It's not one single person doing it, it's doing it together. And the same with mistakes, we always have to smile when people describe mistakes as something one person did, compared to describing it as something that happened in response to response to response. And maybe it's a result that we don't want. And then a good question would be, what would we like to have see instead?
In an individualistic world, which is pretty much the modern Western world, we're encouraged to think it's me or you, isolation, and that leads easily to blame. And if we can blame someone for something that went wrong, then it's not me, somebody else, and that's very comforting. Both solution focus and improvisation recognize that it's a co-created world. The action is in the interaction, as we say, and even more than it being interactional, it's emergent. Those interactions are happening in the moment, bit by bit, and until we get to that bit, we don't know what the next bit can be. It's not possible to predict, mathematically intractable, can't be done. You have to run the thing to know what's going to happen with the thing. And if you're doing that with an approach that it's interesting to see what happens, we're curious about it, and we're looking to spot the successes along the way, because they're going to encourage us not only to feel good about what we're doing, but to see these recipes and ways of going about it that will help us to achieve what we want. That's going to be much more useful to us than an attitude of looking for what's gone wrong, who did something wrong, and where we're not succeeding. That's just going to leave us stuck. And often a solution-focused conversation is switching the person or the people from thinking about it in that unhelpful way and telling an unhelpful story about it to telling a more useful story, a story of resource, a story of what's wanted, a story of why something matters and the difference that it's going to make and what they're going to do about it. If you do that, this is why I think it's comprehensive, that's all you need, because then you'll get the things done. And everything else can be left behind, overlooked, or dealt with if it needs to be. We're not saying you don't deal with things that are wrong. Of course you do. It's how you go about doing it.
Yeah, since you told us about the idea that what people do when they go out is improvisation, we've been thinking about how useful it could be to train our solution-focused clients in improvisation, because when they go out, they will respond to the world. And in some ways, we're doing that. We do that, for example, through tasks or kind of focus questions that we might give them at the end of a session, or tell them that the first question of the next session might be something to focus on. And I think we're also doing that in the way we ask questions, or the questions we ask and the focuses we invite them to give us answers. But still, for us, it might be interesting to think of how else we could support our clients in their improvisation in the real life within the solution focused session. And I know that's not kind of a solution focused lens.
It is a solution focused lens in a way, because one of the key ideas for me about improvisation is that we are all improvisers. It's not something you learn from scratch by coming to a class. We improvise, each one of us, every day through the life. Every conversation you have is not scripted to a greater or lesser degree. You're making it up as you go along, and it depends on what the other person says and you respond to them. So everyone has improvisation skills. And this is very similar to the idea in solution focus, that everyone already has the resources they need to do what they're going to do. And it's bringing that to light. So if we're bringing to light the ability of our clients to improvise, by which I mean adjust in the moment as things are happening, that fits exactly with what we're encouraging them to do within a solution-focused conversation. When, what will you notice when? Suppose someone says that to you, how might you respond to them? When you do that, how might they respond to you? We're building up this picture of improvisational interaction in the solution-focused conversation about, for example, the preferred future. And we're selecting the stories of hope and of achievement and of encouragement and resilience from the past, so that people are feeling more equipped to use that resourceful part of themselves, but reapply it. So improvisation is not about doing the same thing again, but it is about reapplication of things that you've done before, skills that you already have, that you can bring to the point at the point exactly where they're needed. And this is where the flow and the elegance and that wonderful moment of people demonstrating to themselves their own competence occurs.
And I think what we also do with solution-focused conversations is to open up possibilities and to invite people to see more possibilities. And the more possibilities I see, the better I'm able to act, the more flexible I am, the more free I am to use this freedom within the structure. Another thing that just comes to my mind listening to you, Paul, is asking about how might you notice is a way of seeing more possibilities, more opportunities when you go out into your everyday life and then you feel like, oh, yeah, that's it.
The improvisation is about the alertness, being able to notice, and solution focus is about what to notice, where to put your attention, which is one of the things that the solution focus people can usefully teach the improvisers is, well, we've got this gift of attention, where is it better to put it? And solution focus has some very strong ideas on what's worth paying attention to and what's not so much worth paying attention to.
And this is one of the things I so much appreciate about the work you do, that you really bring improv away from the stage into everyday life. And there is, beside your book Easy, there is another book I really love. It's Improv Wisdom. And I saw that Patricia Ryan Madsen also wrote a very, very nice testimonial for your book. And this made me really excited. Yeah, it's really bringing things that are useful on stage into everyday life. And you mentioned earlier when you were trained with solution focus that you also started to apply it in your everyday life and not only in your business. So how did that influence your life, maybe change things?
Well, probably not to the same extent that you've done. We integrated some solution focused practices directly into life, like talking about a preferred future with relationship to something that we're going to do. Certainly asking solution focused questions of children and making appreciative comments about what they're doing, paying attention to when they're doing things the way that we like them to do, and paying less attention to the part of the behavior that's not so good. I remember the Steve DeShazer story when he was told by a client, he'd asked, what do you do with your days? And the client said, I drink and listen to music. And Steve said, "What music?" So you can leave part of a conversation and pay your attention to another part of it. And you can do that with anything that a child is doing very, very easily.
Oh, there was this beautiful picture of you in the morning sitting with your granddaughter on the kitchen table and making a lovely drawing, and you just followed her flow, and then she was not interested, but you brought her back with your crayon, and then she came back, and it was like this lovely dance of seeing what works, how far you can go and how can you engage with her and then also let go again. And yeah, this somehow reminds me of what you were talking about.
She likes to play the piano with me, and it's very lucky that I'm completely untalented as a piano player. So I can play one or two very simple tunes, which I'll play while she sits on my knee, and she has the idea that there's music comes out of this machine. And then she'll just plink plonk a couple of notes, and I'll plink plonk the same notes or the ones next to them, and we improvise together with this level of talent that's about appropriate for a 1.5-year-old.
So you don't only apply things in your life, and you don't only go to organizations to give trainings. You shared a story that recently you trained with entrepreneurs and gave an improv training for entrepreneurs in Austria, actually. What did you do there, and what differences did your training make for the people who attended?
Yes, this was one of the first proper applied improvisation courses in a university, which was set up by Lukas Zenk, who's an associate professor in Krems. The first day I spent with him during the week that they were doing the training, I spent with him and his very young daughter, and we played all day while his wife was doing the day's training. And I had the next day to introduce them to principles of improvisation. And the principles of improvisation, as you mentioned earlier, are not theatrically dependent. So they are ideas like let go, inhabit the moment, freedom within structure, embracing uncertainty, playing to play. And we're very playful within these sessions. Accept and build, short turn taking, which is another thing that connects, I think, really well with solution-focused way of doing things, and spot successes, which is really directly from solution-focused approach. So the business entrepreneurs hear these ideas, and there's some activities that give them an experience of them, and then the opportunity to reflect on them. And then the large part of the day is, how does that seem relevant to them? And they make sense of it. And it seems very relevant to them because those are the ideas that are needed for modern businesses to succeed. And as an entrepreneur, as new entrepreneurs, they were ready for that. And this course, this particular module, is filling up each year with people who are keen to hear these ideas and see their relevance. And improvisation has a good stock of activities and practices that enable people to get this through embodiment, through experiencing it, not just seeing it written down.
So improvisation and solution focus for leaders beyond agile?
That's my vision. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's something that would be wonderful to see if business leaders, community leaders, politicians were honest about what it is they would like to see as the way society would be. So a solution-focused question from a climate change session I was at recently is, what kind of world do you want to see, given where we are now? And I'd like to hear what people think a world would be like with lower use of carbon and different means of transport and use of energy and distribution of income and all the other things that could make, in my view, for a better world. Let's hear what people think that is. That's a very solution-focused approach in a community, is let's explore a vision of what we would all like to see. And then how do we use our resource to get to that? And how do we improvise along the way in that improvisation space, which is capable of dealing with that enormous complexity? Can't be planned step by step. That would be ridiculous and impossible. But if we're to some extent aligned as to where we want to go, we can play together, serious play together, to get towards it.
What a powerful preferred future. So Paul, looking back on your solution-focused journey of more than 20 years, if there is one learning we have not yet talked about that made a real difference for you, that might also make a difference for someone else, what might that be today?
Maybe we talked about this a bit, but the insight that people know for themselves what they want and have that expertise in their own lives, and this switch from an expert perspective to a co-creative, collaborative, respectful approach seems the biggest difference.
Thank you very much for that. So now let's come to the challenge of the week.
Right. Let's make it an improvisational and solution-focused challenge of the week to notice how you are responding in the moment to something that's important to you, that you care about, that you're working on at the moment, and allow yourself possibilities. That if it comes to a point where you think, oh, I always do it this way and that doesn't really seem to be much fun or much help, that you allow yourself that moment right then to see what other ways there might be of doing it. And if you feel like it, test it, try it with a spirit of experimentation and see what happens. And if it works well, keep doing it. If it doesn't work so well, don't do it and find something else.
Yeah, let's do it. Thank you very much, Paul. And we are curious, how does the challenge of the week go for you? And what inspired you in our conversation with Paul? What was useful in this podcast? And what made a difference for you in your everyday life? So please let us know and comment in the comment field on www.sfontour.com/simplyfocuspodcast and then go to episode number 79.
Yeah, so let's play together and let us know. And you'll also find all the resources that we talked about in the resource section of this podcast. Have a look, learn more about improvisation, buy Paul's book, Easy, and of course the other 5 books too.
Paul, thank you very much for being here with us. Thank you very much for this conversation and for, well, making us even more curious about improv and exploring the world of playfulness and experimental co-creation.
And this with a very solution-focused twist. And now it's joke time.
It's something that a comedian I worked with when I was at the BBC used to say, a Scottish comedian called Arnold Brown. And he used to say at the end of his show, if there's anything you haven't understood, please consider it significant.
Thank you, and goodbye.
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 Wow, what a great episode again. This was the Simply Focused Podcast with Alfie Cherney and Dominic Odat, your podcast for a life in joy and ease.